everyone, I'm Megan, and welcome to Word Crash, the game show where authors of all genres can get creative. First off, let's meet our contestants. From Texas's left ventricle, author of the Bleecker Street Bodies and lover of all things writerly, please welcome Aaron Gallagher.
Hi, Megan. Thank you for having me.
No problem, Aaron. Great to have you here. Bareth calls himself a professional storyteller and amateur cook. He just published Privilege, a trilogy, and enjoys traveling with his wife. Everyone give a warm welcome to Bareth Krishnan.
Thank you so much for having me, Megan. Excited to be here.
And we are excited to have you today. Well, nothing left to do now but to get to it. Let's play some Word Crash. Today, we're going to start with a game we like to call Time of Your Life. Retell an experience from your life in a genre of your choice. Bareth, why don't you go first?
Sure. Interesting game. Let's see. Well, I'm really into romantic comedies, so I'm pretty sure that would be the genre I go with. You know what? I'm gonna go with a classic, How I Found My Wife. It would be called, I think, Finding Forever. And it would be a romantic comedy about a young, hardened political operative, past career, who gives it all up to be with the woman he loves. He finds her on the campaign trail and decides to just leave politics behind and support her career in a trope-defying move. You know, traveled across a dozen states over that time period of my life. Did a lot of long distance, but somehow we find a way to make it work.
Fantastic. Now, we're all going to take a stab at fictionalizing this. What fictional thing would you like to add?
I don't have a six-pack in real life, so let's give me a six-pack.
Yes! Let's do the six-pack. I applaud that. I applaud that. That's a fantastic thing to add. My question to you is, what states would you want to visit in this story? Like, what are the key important states that you think you could tell something that, you know, would be entertaining?
Iowa, Louisiana, New Hampshire, South Carolina.
Now, why Iowa? Because Iowa does not seem exciting to me. Sorry to all the people in Iowa. I'm sorry. I didn't mean it that way. It just, you know, a lot of the southern states have certain expectations and certain expectations of New Hampshire. So
Yeah. It's politics in me. I was like ground zero for presidential politics, so I gotta throw Iowa in there.
Okay, that makes sense.
And then Louisiana. I actually did meet my wife in Louisiana, so very, very close to me. I did my grad work in Louisiana, so I feel like I can talk about that with some authority. Oh, and then Virginia. I'm from Virginia, so gotta throw Virginia in there.
Fantastic. All right, so Aaron, what would you throw into this story to spice it up a little bit?
Well, the first thing that comes to mind is leaving a political career for the woman you love. I think it would be a nice twist if she were also going to go into politics. That would be my choice.
He's going to give up a bunch of stuff. What is he going to end up doing? Is this a Mr. Mom scenario?
I think so. I think so. I think he takes his hard-boiled life and his endless, you know, conference calls, drive-in and chewing and driving down, you know, Route 66 or whatever. And he trades it all in for a minivan and kids and the car seats and soccer games and the whole shebang.
Okay. So, you know, in romantic comedies like this, there's a couple of beats, right? There's the beat of I've given everything up, and there's a little bit of depression, and then there's I'm just getting into things and I'm terrible at these things. And then there's that moment when somebody realizes that some of their skills, that you can apply some of these skills to whatever life they're leading. So what's that moment for your character now where he learns that some skill he has is super effective in his new life?
All right. So let's give me just like a jillion kids. Let's give me like four kids, and they're all running around the kitchen counter, the kitchen table before, you know, before school starts. They all need their breakfasts, and I'm about ready to just like jump off the second floor window, and I've just had it. And I think my brain clicks, and I realize I've done this before. It's just like organizing a good conference call. You know, mm-hmm. I've got my tasks for individual people. I'm basically a project manager. I slip into project manager mode and just the drill sergeant in me from my campaign days comes out, and I give people their specific tasks, and they just do it.
Nice. And I have a feeling your character would be a terror to the PTA.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
I'm imagining all four kids wearing suits and carrying clipboards.
Aaron, one kid has a problem. What problem does one kid have?
Well, it's obviously going to be a time conflict with nap time and juice time. Scheduling issues.
Yeah, scheduling issues. But let's make it a scheduling issue between, I don't know, soccer and ballet or something like that. Let's make it something social. Or maybe they want to be in soccer and ballet and they can't for some reason. What reason might they not be able to? And what reason can we get, you know, our fictional Bereth to
Yeah,
to
I mean,
for
I
us?
Think I think, you know, all of them coming from, you know, a strong working mom, a stay-at-home dad, the hustle bustle of, you know, politics and that background. I think there's going to be a lot of conflict within these kids over traditional gender roles and whether to embrace them or not. And so maybe, you know, a 7-year-old daughter is wondering, you know, I really like ballet, but is going into ballet too much of a gender stereotype for me? Because I like soccer too, and I can't do both. I have to pick, and that is a moment that could lead into a father-daughter montage.
I really want to see the father-daughter ballet montage. I think that'd be super supportive. But then the soccer montage is just as good. What kind of music should we have for the soccer or ballet montage?
Oh, you'd have to go classic. You'd have to go like Eye of the Tiger.
Oh, right. Eye of the Tiger. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I'm seeing me doing some pirouette and, you know, whatever.
With the leg stretchy thing where it's, you know, like... Yes.
I wonder if Kids Bop has an Eye of the Tiger cover.
They probably do.
You know what? I actually think they do. There were those old... I'm sure they still make them. Like, no, that's what I call Music 47 or whatever it is. I'm pretty sure it's on one of those.
I was actually thinking that during the montage between the soccer and the ballet and maybe book club and karate that... The early dad messes up and drops each of them at the wrong sport. You've got this image of a ballet dancer with her tutu and her toes just driving that ball right through the goals.
That would be awesome.
Exactly. You got the one who was going to the book club who's blocking punches at karate practice. I think it would be very funny to just completely screw them all up.
It's very funny. Yeah.
What's the final climax?
All right, let's see. The ending. The ending is... I think the ending is he runs for office. Yeah, I think the ending is he runs for office. But he runs for, like the most limited... Oh, here's the ending. Because he's in suburbia, right? Mm-hmm. He's, like, checked in. He's fully in suburbia. He runs for... president of his HOA.
Oh, wow. I'm going to make a difference. I'm going to be the president of the HOA.
He's combating those zoning regulations that are out of date. He's, you know, he's organizing ice cream socials. And look, there are rules if you want to put together a garage sale. You know, you can't just decide to do it one day.
Oh, that's amazing. That's amazing.
Not on my block.
I love it. I love it. This is great. Thank you so much. Aaron, what do you have for us today?
I was thinking that I have this peculiar facet of my life where I've been hit by a number of cars, either through my fault or somebody else's fault.
Hold on. You've been hit by cars numerous times. Like, not all at once, right? Different times in your life?
No. Yeah, no, I wasn't run over in succession.
Oh, okay.
And you were in a vehicle. It didn't hit your person.
Oh, no. I've never been in a car and hit by another car.
Okay. All right.
This is all very important because we need to know how ragdoll the physics are going to have to be when you get hit.
Pretty ragdoll. Okay. Pretty ragdoll. The first time I got hit by a car, I was just riding my bike. I had just left school. I was in my freshman year of high school. And I whipped around a corner too fast and right into the grill of this car that was turning in the other direction. It threw me off my bike and up onto a lawn. And I ended up spread eagle down the lawn, knocked out. Long, long story. It's how I met my first girlfriend. It was her lawn. Anyway, I've been...
Like the meat cute.
Well, yeah, a little bit.
This kind of smacks of Back to the Future.
A little bit. But I was thinking more of a horror genre.
Ooh, you want to tell us this horror, huh?
Exactly. I don't know what I did to tick off the cars, but the cars have it out for me. I've been backed over in a parking lot. I've been knocked off two different bikes, and I've been front-ended in a grocery store parking lot when I was on a sidewalk.
Wow.
Cars just seem to be drawn to me.
This is like a Maximum Overdrive kind of thing, right?
Yeah, except sort of more passive-aggressive, because none of them were going too fast. I've never been really seriously injured. I got a couple of scrapes the first time. Airport parking lot one was great because the dude was in a pickup truck and just backed right over me. I remember getting up off the concrete and he's still looking over his shoulder. And then he turns around and sees me standing where his truck was and just freaks the heck out. So, yeah, but that would be my life story told as horror. Somehow the cars are out to get me.
Somehow. Okay, well, let's workshop the somehow.
Machines have come.
Yeah. This is the beginning of the machine revolution. They have chosen you. So what did you do? What did you do to deserve this?
That's a good question. I have somehow angered the cars, and I don't know what I've done, but I've inadvertently, just as a species, angered all of them.
Could you have, I don't know, bashed up a couple matchboxes with a matchbox cars with a hammer, and they kind of take that personally? Could you have crushed one by accident? Stepped on one and broke it?
I remember setting a dump truck on fire when I was a kid.
That'll do it.
that will do. Are you sure you want to admit to that on air?
No. A
statute of limitations might have run out.
We hope.
But essentially, I did burn a car in effigy, so it's entirely possible that I've angered the entire species just because I sacrificed one of their icons.
You also said you were riding a bike your first time, right? So maybe they were like, oh, you think you're too good for a car. What are you getting at here, Aaron?
They're elitist. It's exactly it. I'm eschewing them as transportation, and they've decided to get out on it.
I'm envisioning this very tense moment, right, where the car is revving, and it's just waiting for you, and you're driving on by, and it's like, rawr! You know, coming after you, but it's slow. Like, from the car's perspective, it's lunging at you, but from the regular perspective, it's just
like someone taking a foot off the gas and it's just sort of rolling gently downhill.
Because, you know, they only get to assert bodily autonomy when someone's foot is not on the gas or on the brake.
It's true. But that does raise the question of smart cars and self-driving. Because A, they can accelerate, and B, you can't hear those stupid things coming to save your life.
Quite literally here, huh?
Yeah.
Okay, Bahreth, let's inject something into Aaron's story. What do you think needs to go in there?
Well, so I think, you know, maybe at the 25% marker, 33% marker, you've come to realize that the cars are out to get you. And so you're in your garage, you've got some car parts together, and I'm not a car person, so I don't know what the parts are called, but you've got some parts together. You've got a radiator and whatever else. You're pouring over some evidence, for lack of a better word, and it's dark. It's late at night. You've got music. You've got your radio, and all of a sudden, garage door opens. You didn't tell it to open. It just opens, and you just see two headlights flick on.
Ooh, I'm getting Carrie vibes here. This is great. great.
I would definitely be stalked by a car that was both terrifying and incompetent. It would try to hit me and then run into the bench or something.
So what's the most terrifying, incompetent car you can think of?
Edsel.
An Edsel. You're going real classic there. Something very classic.
I would go with the Chevy Nova, but they have a tendency to explode randomly, and that would end the story too soon.
How about we go with something slightly more modern? What about a Pontiac Aztec? One of the most hated cars ever created in modern times, right? So you get a Pontiac Aztec, you know, with its crazy headlights. I'm sure you know what's going to happen now. The guy who designed that's going to listen to this podcast, or someone's going to add him on Twitter, and he's going to be upset, right? Well, I'm sorry.
Hate tweets.
Yes.
Seriously, though, the Aztec was like the Marty Feldman of cars. It was just such an unusual configuration. That would be perfect. Yeah.
You get away from it the first time. You get away from the second time. What are you trying to do in your life? What's the reason you're not, like, just holed up in your basement, never leaving? You got to have some goal.
Well, food. I have to get to the grocery store.
For food. For food. I'm going to starve. It's been 3 weeks. I've eaten every can of beans in the house. I'm looking longingly at that cat food.
I see a montage of me trying to get on various types of public transportation and being stymied every single time. Like the bus door, only half of it will open at a time. And every time I try to go through, it smacks me in the face.
I try to get a cab,
and it just keeps edging forward so I can't get in.
You finally get to a grocery store. The only one open available to you within walking distance is like a Whole Foods. You get to the Whole Foods, and then, I don't know, like the Whole Foods near me at least, it has this like entrance that's a big parking garage. So you just walk out into the parking garage, and it's just filled. It's just filled with cars.
And all the headlights come on at once.
That's a fantastic scene. You know what I thought might be another good scene? In Texas, you have kind of like these stores that you drive through, right? They're kind of like a barn, and you drive through and people put stuff in your car. That's correct, right? Those exist?
Yep.
It'd be great if you walked up to one of those, so maybe sometime early in the book or in the movie, and a car just revs. You know, you're picking something up and goes through a beer, of course, because you have to tell people that yes, you can drive your car into one of these places and buy beer and drive off with it without getting out of your car.
There are drive-through liquor stores that also sell guns down here. Yeah.
So I think that belongs in the movie because that is definitely something original in Texas that most people don't know.
I know, it was a shock to me when I got here.
Me too. In that year that I lived in the Austin area, there were a lot of things that were shocking.
If you were going to put all of the bad things you could possibly think of in one store, that would be the store. Alcohol, firearms, tobacco, in a moving vehicle, off you go. Yay.
So how do you get out of this?
That's a good question. And I think it has something to do with all the parts that are scattered on my workbench. I think I'm going to have to make a Frankensteinian monster to battle the cars. Yeah.
Nice.
That would be my guess. I have to cobble something together.
Like an 18 kind of thing? We have another montage, right? Montage with the helmet down and the sparks flying, even though when you weld, you're not supposed to make a lot of sparks, but you got to do it for the camera, right?
Yeah. It would be this great long montage with great big armored plates and a giant four-barreled carburetor and these huge mag wheels. And when the garage door came up, I'd be on a Segway or something.
And you go and you defeat all the cars and everything's good. We need a twist at the end.
I think while you're making, you know, you're welding and everything, it turns out only way to defeat it was to become it. I think now you've fused some car parts onto you.
This is definitely horror. We have body horror now. Right, and body modification, that's definitely well within horror right there.
I don't see close up on my glasses, little windshield wipers.
Perfect.
Yes, absolutely. Post-credit scene. I'm going to do post-credit scene here for you. Throw it out there. You get on a plane. Your luggage falls out the back. Just falls right out.
Setting up the sequel.
What's the name of it?
Car Wars?
We'll go.
I'm trying to think of a good car pun. You know, driver's warning, crash landing.
Door is ajar.
No airbags.
Seat belts of justice.
Belts of justice. The Aztec's revenge.
Yeah.
Nice.
I think that's it.
Aztec's revenge. Fantastic. So we definitely have to pitch this movie to Hollywood as the Aztec's revenge.
We need a Sharknado 5. I'm sure we could get an angry car movie.
True. Very true. That's great. All right. All right. Well, it's time to move on after all that fun. Have a game you'd like to subject our contestants to? Tweet us at WordCrashGame. Maybe your suggestion will be used on a future episode. And now, back to the show. Next, we have Secret Sauce, where our authors reveal some of their tips and tricks for getting the job done. We're going to start with Bareth.
I was saying in my head, please don't pick me first. Please don't pick me first. All right. Okay. I'm very goal oriented and I'm very scheduled. If it's on the schedule, it's gonna happen. You can put whatever ridiculousness you want in my planner, and as long as it's there, I will make it happen. That's very much something that motivates me. You know, if I have sketched out 6 to 8 AM before work, for writing, I don't care what I have to do. I'm gonna write from 6 to 8 AM. And, you know, look, sitting down at your desk and just looking at a blank Word document for 2 hours counts as writing. As long as you're subjecting yourself to the experience, cause eventually you're gonna get sick of, you know, a blank Word document mocking you. You're gonna write something. That's something I'm really of the notion that you could squeeze creativity out of someone organically. You just have to, you know, sit and commit. I will sometimes go months without actually writing, traditionally like words on paper writing, but I've got things in my head, so then when I actually sit down and do it, the last 6 weeks after not writing, you know, for the first half of the year, the last 6 weeks, I knocked out like 40,000 words. And now I, you know, have a first draft of a manuscript. So that's kind of how I approach
it. Great. So it sounds like a combination of brute force and just going with the flow.
Yeah. Yeah. You gotta just embrace the pain.
Embrace the pain. That is fantastic advice, because all of us have felt the pain of writing, and I'm certain many of our listeners have felt the pain of writing. It's universal, and no one should feel bad.
Yep.
Aaron, what kind of tip do you have for our listeners today?
The single greatest thing I ever did, and I've shamelessly stolen this, and I'll even credit it, Stephen King's book on writing. I'm reading through this thing, and I'm burning through it because I'm a huge Stephen King fan anyway. And he threw out this advice almost haphazardly where he said, finish everything. And that percolated for a while until I decided, you know what? It makes sense, because you get better at things you practice. And if all I ever do is start things and never finish them, what am I really practicing? So what I did was I took a year and I committed myself to finishing every single idea that I had, everything I'd ever started. Every short story, every song, every novel, no matter how good or bad, I committed to getting to the end of every single one of them. In that year, I blew through a lot of really terrible, terrible short stories and terrible songs and terrible books, but I kept practicing actually getting to the end of a book. And shortly after that, when I committed to writing new stuff, I wrote 15 books in 4 years. When I sat down to actually commit to finishing everything, I unlocked something, and it's highly specific and very individualized, like all writing is, but I've never had writer's block ever again. Every time I sit down to write, I've practiced finishing, and when I write, I just go all the way through to the end. That's my personal trick. That's my mantra, is finish everything, and that's what really unlocked my potential for me. Maref has an excellent point. Sitting down, even if you don't do anything, doing it every day, making yourself sit in the chair, butt in chair, is the most important thing.
Yeah, I believe there was a YouTube video by someone who goes by the name Veritasium, who read a book, and I wish I knew the original book now, but I don't. But he said, it's more important to make a habit out of doing something than it is to perfectly succeed at it the first time. I've taken up working out, right? I'm working out, I'm doing it every day, and a lot of people have that goal. But what happens to a lot of people? They're like, okay, I'm going to get up 6 o'clock every morning, and I'm going to get dressed, and I'm going to drive to the gym, right? I'm going to work out for an hour, and then I'm going to drive back, and by then it'll be 7:30, and I'll take my shower, and then I'll be out the door by 8 for work. And they do it for like 2 weeks, but then they stop, right? Because that's tough. That's aggressive. Whereas if you were to say, every day, I'm going to do 5 push-ups. That's it. And you do that for a month. Now you're in the habit of working out. If you move to 10 minutes after that, that's great. Or, you know, 20 or 25 push-ups, whatever it is. But you got to do it every day. Because if it's one thing, all these cell phone games, all these gotcha cell phone games continue to drive home, is that if you do something every day for a month, it's a habit. Right? If you play Pokemon Go or the Fate games or Fire Emblem games that are on your cell phone, right? Any of those things, they're like, no, they want you to log in every day. They want you to log in every day. They want you to get in the habit of playing their game, do a little bit every day, just the login and check, right? And this is a way to make that work for you. You know, that got me through a lot of 2020. Get up, do my 10 minutes, my 15 minutes. It became, an hour. And now I have a really great workout schedule. And I did the same thing with writing. And it sounds very much like what Moref put forth, right? I'm going to sit down and I'm going to do it. And I'm not going to judge myself. Yeah, I love it. I love it. Thank you so much, Aaron. Thank you, both of you. I think it's time to get back to the games. How do you feel?
All right.
Let's do it. Get ready, people, because it's time to character mash. Take two characters, at least one must be from pop culture, and mash their stories together. Aaron, why don't you start?
The two characters I would mash together would be Bruce Wayne and Wayne Newton. And create Bruce Wayne Newton, a crime-fighting superhero by night and a cheesy lounge singer billionaire by day. And the reason that he only stalks Gotham City from 1 a.m. to 5 a.m. is because 1 a.m. is when the show gets out. He performs all afternoon and evening. Then he throws on the cowl and he goes. That's why his voice is so gravelly, because he has spent all night singing his heart out. And by the time he hits the street, all he can do is talk like this.
That is amazing. So obviously, Bruce Wayne Newton, he's got a standing gig, at a casino or something?
Well, yeah, a casino, because that would make it easy for heist to happen. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, you get conflict of him trying to figure out how to stop it without people knowing he's Batman.
I love the concept, Bruce Wayne Newton. What story are we telling with Bruce Wayne Newton?
Probably his continuing struggle to keep people from realizing he's Batman with that great big mustache.
Are you saying that the mustache pokes out of his cowl?
I mean, he could totally sit Caesar it and dye it dark, but people you get close enough to the criminals, they're going to see the stash, and they're going to wonder.
Bareth, I need you to chime in here, right? What villain should Bruce Wayne Newton fight?
I think leaning into the fact that the villains are going to know, I think the Joker knows, man. The Joker knows who Bruce Wayne Newton really is, but because he's the Joker, he doesn't care. The fun of it, I mean, the fact that he knows just adds to the fun of it. And in fact, I think whenever you get into, like, one of his underlings, or even, like, you know, Killer Croc or whomever else coming close to, you know, revealing who he is, the Joker's just going to kill that guy, because that ends the game, right? The game ends if people know who Bruce Wayne Newton really is.
So wait a minute. Well, we have to mash up the Joker, too. Who do we mash Joker with?
Let's see.
Wait, wasn't there some song, Clowns to the Left of Me, Jokers to the Right?
Yeah.
Who sang that song?
Steeler's Wheel.
Hmm.
Yeah, it's oddly consonant with him playing in casinos all the time.
Yeah.
A band Killer's Wheel.
Yeah, there we go. That's who's the Joker. That's
going into the third act, Bruce Wayne Newton is going to be booked for a birthday party. And when he gets to the birthday party, it's going to turn out that it's like the Joker's nephew. And he's going to cause a problem just to see how Bruce Wayne Newton deals with the fact that he's got to be on the stage and stopping the Joker's gang at the same time.
That's excellent. And the theme, he goes into the nephew's birthday party and just the big banner, let's put a smile on your face.
I would imagine that the closing scene, Bruce Wayne Newton has successfully stopped the Joker's gang and kept this horde of children from finding out he's actually Batman. You've got this beautiful scene where the camera's panning over the children as he sings his famous songs. And all of the kids are just eyes wide, mouths open. And as the camera pans back around, he's still wearing the cowl. He's forgotten to take the cowl off.
Well, there goes everything, right?
Exactly.
So who's the love interest in this? It's a Batman movie, just like a James Bond movie. There's got to be a love interest. And she's got to be complicated. Or he. I don't know. Whichever you want to do. Or they.
I mean, if you really want to get convoluted and technical, I guess the love interest would be the Joker.
Wait. So Bruce Wayne Newton is involved with the alter ego of the Joker. But the Joker knows that Bruce Wayne Newton is the Batman.
Yes.
And is perfectly, perfectly happy to both date him and screw with him.
I see it as like a really twisted Mr. and Mrs. Smith, but with a lot of song.
Yeah.
This could just be a Batman plot. It's well within Elseworlds for them. They've done things much crazier than this. I think you're onto something.
I think I have peaked with Bruce Wayne Newton. For the rest of my life, I'm going to be trying to hit that bar.
I think it's called Jokes on You.
Ooh, well, that would be awesome.
Jokes on You. Very nice. Fantastic. All right, Breath. You have to cleanse our palate from Bruce Wayne Newton.
So I took kind of a different approach to it. So I'm gonna give you the genre first. It's buddy comedy meets spy thriller. President Frank Underwood from House of Cards and President James Marshall from Air Force One, so Harrison Ford, Air Force One, they have to unite in the multiverse to save America from an internal government plot to resurrect Nazis from the dead.
This is huge. You have plenty of great stuff here. Okay, so there's fundamental beats to a buddy cop movie, and they're almost exactly the same as the funny beats to a romantic comedy, right?
Yeah.
There's the two people meet and they don't like each other. There's the something happens and they respect each other. They get separated for some reason. They work their way back together and solve the problem in the end, right? So that first beat, how do they meet and what do they think of each other?
You know, I think it's a historic document that President Frank Underwood is trying to salvage. You know, the Declaration of Independence has gone missing, and he's trying to find it. But when he does find it, he wants it for himself. And I think, you know, at that point, James Marshall comes in from the multiverse. And look, you can call him James Marshall. At the end of the day, it's Harrison Ford, right? Harrison Ford is all of his characters, including none other than Indiana Jones. And I think he sees Frank Underwood trying to get away with the original declaration. And he turns to him, he confronts him and says, it belongs in a museum.
I knew that was coming. That's great.
Well, if you're going to have him do that, you're going to have Frank Underwood say, get off my plane.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that's the real falling out, right? To take the story farther. I think they're on a plane. They're on their way to Argentina to find the lost Nazis. Harrison Ford, President Marshall, is just really pissing Frank Underwood off. And so finally, they've both got their parachutes on, and Frank Underwood just, you know, kind of 300s it, kicks him off the plane. He goes, you know, get off my plane, and just kicks him off the plane.
Are we in Frank Underwood's world, or are we in the Air Force One world?
I think we're in the Air Force One world. I think that's all around a calmer world.
Calmer.
You're much more likely to survive the fall, too.
Yeah.
Okay, so they start working together, right? They already hate each other. They're forced, you know, they figure out that they're forced to defeat these Nazis because no matter what, no matter
America
how crazy the House
Nazis.
Of Cards world was, Nazis are worse. Seems like one of them should have an ulterior motive.
Yeah.
Like,
you would never expect Marshall to have an ulterior motive, so he's probably the more logical choice. But after Underwood 300s him out of the door of the plane, you should have this shot of him trying to open his parachute and it not working. And Underwood, this is the moment where the buddy cops become buddies, when one of them is forced to save the other because he realizes, God damn it, I need him. So you've got slumped in the doorway of the plane going, God damn it, and he has to jump out and grab Marshall and pull his chute. Die.
Yeah.
Land in the jungle.
And maybe here you get the, you know, you get the direct to camera. Frank Underwood realizes, you know, the chute isn't working. He always meant for it to be a joke. Direct to camera, oh, you know, this guy annoys me, but at the end of the day, I really do need him to stop these stupid Nazis. And then he jumps out and he embraces him and then pulls the chute and they both land.
Exactly. Because the Declaration of Independence, unbeknownst to everybody, has a secret recipe on the back for raising Nazis from the dead. But Marshall is the only one who can read it. That's why he needs to.
All right.
It's UV, right? That's classic. You can't read it? Shine a UV light on it. Now we can read it. Right? So there's got to be this gut-wrenching scene at the end where they have to return to their own worlds, right? How does that work?
I think Frank goes sappy throughout the movie. You know, every great book, every great movie has meaningful character arcs. You know, who you are at the beginning can't be who you are at the end. And so I think Frank gets sappy, and Harrison Ford has a bit more of an edge to him by the end of the movie. So I think, you know, Frank is talking about, oh, you know, I'm really going to miss you, but this... all of this, is this real? Is this not real? Are we even going to remember each other when we go back to our own universes? And I think the ending is, he says, this isn't real, is it? And Harrison Ford, straight to camera, goes, you know, you may think that. I couldn't possibly comment. And then he just jumps in.
Okay, all right. Would anyone mind if I put a twist on this?
Not at all.
Go for it.
So, Underwood is back home. Right? He's back home in the House of Cards universe. Wait a minute, I got that right. Underwood's House.
Yes.
Now, Underwood is back in the House of Cards universe, and he's driving in his limo, and there's an explosion, and the door rips open, and it's Arnold Schwarzenegger with a Vote Schwarzenegger pin, and he says, come with me if you want to live. Right?
Excellent. Excellent.
Oh God, my voice can't go that low.
That was awesome.
Because you always got to set up the sequel. I'm not a one-shot-and-done kind of girl. You got to set up the sequel. You got to keep it going. That's just how I roll.
One minor edit.
Hmm?
It's got to be vote for me if you want to live.
Yes! Vote for me if you want to live.
How is he not using that as a campaign platform?
It's a little threatening, I have to say. It sounds a little threatening.
More so than any other politician?
We're not getting into that.
Fair enough.
Anyways, fantastic. This has been a lot of fun. Thank you both. That was wildly entertaining. Before we go, it's time to give our authors a chance to talk about what's new and exciting in their lives. Aaron?
Thank you, Megan. On the 28th of this month, July, my next book, So Much Fire and So Many Plans, is being released. My book, So Much Fire and So Many Plans, being released on the 28th of this month, and it is a narrative fiction story about the obsessive nature of art told from the perspective of painters from 1950s Brazil to modern-day New York.
That is fascinating, and that's kind of historical fiction, or?
Yes, somewhat.
Where did you pull from? Who was your inspiration for this?
I have no idea. My ideas generally stem from one incident or a quote or something that I read. When I was doing my BA at Texas State, I took an art history class. I was studying the various painters, and I was reading about Claude Monet. And I started reading his private correspondence with a bunch of his painterly friends. And toward the end of his life, he had written to one of his friends about all of the paintings that he had never done, all of the things that he had never accomplished. And the actual line he used was, "When I was young, I had so much fire and so many plans." Right after I read that sentence, basically the entire book just dropped right on me from wherever they come. And that's why I wrote it. I couldn't not write it. It just sort of took over my life. And I delved into painters and writers and artists and Brazil. I still have no idea why it was supposed to be set in Brazil, but I had to learn about Brazil. That was pretty cool. So that's where that came from. And that's why I wrote that.
Well, it sounds super fascinating, and I'm sure many of our readers are going to love this.
I hope so. I had a lot of fun writing it, and it taught me a lot, not just about painting, but about writing. It was a very fun book to write because it's something new that I hadn't done before.
When did you say it was coming out again?
The 28th.
The 28th. So much fire, so many plants. Coming the 28th. But Raph, what would you like to talk about?
Yeah, so Privilege, a trilogy, just came out a few months ago, and I've been busy promoting that this year. I'll be speaking at the Mid-Ohio Indies Festival in Columbus, Ohio, August 14th, if you're in the area. I'll be signing copies of my book, giving away some prizes. But just in general, Privilege, a trilogy, is a project near and dear to my heart. It's a House of Cards meets Ocean's 11. So you've got heist in there. You've got political thriller in there. You do have a presidential campaign. It's set in modern day New York. Yeah. Own voices thriller. I'm an Indian American, and pretty much all the main characters are Indian-American. So yeah, definitely if you're into House of Cards, Ocean's 11, that kind of thing, it has an ensemble cast. There's hijinks, there's romance, there's political intrigue, and you can find it wherever books are sold.
I'm embarrassed to say that I did not look up the blurb about your book beforehand, but I am intrigued now that you've said it. Ocean's 11 meets House of Cards.
Yes.
Very cool. Very cool. All right. Now it's time for the most important part of the show. Which pitch wins the day? Is it the horror story of Cars Out to Get You, or a crossover between House of Cards and Air Force One? Vote for any of your favorite story ideas by tweeting us at WordCrashGame. Links in the description below for everything we talked about today. If you're listening on YouTube, remember to like and subscribe. I'm Megan, this has been Word Crash, reminding you always to get creative.